This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
This is The Joe Gaither Show on BamaCentral.com.
Good morning, Tuscaloosa! Internet world, West Alabama, how we doing today on this Monday? Happy Cinco de Mayo. It is the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. You guys are checking us out on the Bama Central YouTube channel, on the Bama Central Facebook page. You're watching us on my own social media machines at Joe Gaither 6 on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, right there. You can find the show on your favorite podcast platforms at The Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com, right there on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon. Good morning. We are live in the Derrick Daniels State Farm Studios. I'm here with Theo Fernandez, and we are going to get into the weekend. We're going to talk about Davis Riley's honest moment. We're going to talk a little bit about Tyler Booker and his fit and Jalen Milroe. We're going to talk about Josh Jacobs. I teased that last week and totally did not get to Josh Jacobs and his appearance on the Pivot podcast. We'll talk a little college football action with Sharon Moore, making my blood boil, Michigan Wolverines, and we'll talk about Alabama's game with Florida State. So big old lineup today. We hope you guys jump in and join us on the comment section at Joe Gaither 6 or at Bama Central. You can leave us a voicemail at 205-462-7340, extension 800. If you want to get involved in the show, I know my man Dax has got a voicemail planned for tomorrow. So Theo, he didn't want to talk to you. He wanted to talk to Mason. So he was like, I'm going to call on Monday so Mason can respond.
It's because I forgot to give him that Bam and the NBA update that one day.
Yeah, you're on the outs with Dax. You need to apologize right off front.
Dax,
I don't know what for, but
you've got to find a way to work this out. I would love to react to your calls.
Absolutely. So here we go. We're going to have a lot of fun. That was Theo Fernandez. You listen to Theo, or you watch, or you follow Theo Fernandez at Theo Fernandez _ on the Twitter machine. We're just off McFarland Boulevard. We are live in the Derrick Daniels State Farm Studios. Call Derrick and his team, 205-758-3391 for all of your insurance needs. Like a good neighbor, Derrick Daniel is there. Call and see how much Derrick can save you today. And with that, let's get into something, Mason. Or let's get into something, Theo. Goodness gracious, I am still asleep. Your name's not Mason. Your name is Theo Fernandez. And Theo, since you are the guest, don't pick the last topic on this list, but what do you want to start with? You want to start with Davis Riley? You want to start with Tyler Booker, Jalen Milroe comparison? You want to go Josh Jacobs on the pivot or Sharon Moore?
Yeah, I want to start with the thing that broke about 15, 20 minutes ago. Talk about
Tell them about Sharon Moore.
So we're all very familiar with the whole Connor Stallion situation.
Let's act like someone's not familiar.
Let's act like someone isn't familiar. Okay. So Jim Harbaugh is one of my favorite coaches of all time. Gets hired at Michigan. Can't beat Ohio State for a bunch of years. They start winning. Then 2023 comes around and they had one of the best seasons in recent memory. Incredible year. You know, hard to knock what they did. Except for the fact that they were actively breaking rules, cheating in games. Connor Stallions is basically going to games of other teams that are Michigan's future opponents, filming signs, all that, stealing, just breaking. Yeah, and there's a whole debate on whether or not what he did should or shouldn't be illegal, but the fact of the matter is it is illegal. Michigan broke rules. You had Connor Stallions, got fired, had to resign. I forget exactly how that went. And then Harbaugh leaves to go to L.A., get out of the whole mess, which probably would have happened anyway, but Harbaugh faces no punishment, and then Michigan really faces no real punishment. Harbaugh had a 3-game suspension, I believe, and there really was very little done to Michigan. But now Sharon Moore, who was one of the top assistants under Harbaugh, now the head coach, finally facing some punishment of his own. 2-game suspension for weeks 3 and 4 for Michigan this year.
Insane. Just really insane to me. Because here we go. You've got your Sharon Moore suspension for your Central Michigan and Nebraska. Right. You're not suspending him week 1 and 2 for New Mexico and Oklahoma. First off, Jim Harbaugh, for the longest, I mean, correct me, was always, we didn't do anything wrong. We didn't do anything wrong. We didn't do anything wrong. And then jolts to the NFL. Well, if you didn't do anything wrong, then why is the university, this is a self-imposed, right? The Michigan football coach is expected to be suspended for 2 games, self-imposed sanctions by the university for the Connor Stallions, it's basically scandal. If you didn't do anything wrong, why are you self-imposing penalties? If you're imposing penalties, why are we picking and choosing weeks 3 and 4? Central Michigan and Nebraska, why are those 2 games, I guess, special or not special compared to New Mexico and Oklahoma? Obviously, it's a season opener with New Mexico, Oklahoma. There's your alma mater, Sharon Moore. Great. We don't want you to be suspended when you go back home. You got to go coach the team in front of your own, you know, home family, that sort of thing. So it's just... It's the most disrespectful slap on the wrist ever to me.
Oh, okay. First of all, second most disrespectful.
Okay.
Because 7th grade me was traumatized by the Houston Astros and all that that they got up to that season and faced no real punishment. That's the best an organization has ever handled a horrific scandal like that. This is number 2 because Michigan's nailed this. There's one big reason that we have to talk about, though, and it ties into this. What is the NCAA realistically going to do? I mean, think about how they're on the ropes right now. Like, everyone recognizes that the NCAA is in a tough position, and you already have people talking about, oh, I wonder if the Big Ten or SEC will ever break away or if we'll ever get something new. If you go out,
which is show, yeah,
you know, guns loaded, targeting this huge historic program. What do you think Michigan's saying in any meeting concerning this? You know, the NCAA is trying to win some favor in any way it can. And I would be very surprised if they go out and add more punishments on top. Because usually you have self-imposed punishments and then you have the NCAA stepping in and raising it. Like Louisville basketball had self-imposed some stuff, and then the NCAA said, no, this isn't enough. We're taking your title, too.
That's what needs to happen, and that's what's going to happen. Because
I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, it's not going to happen because exactly what you're alluding to, the NCAA being toothless, the NCAA being powerless and not really. And what you're kind of dancing around here is the whole big problem we've been playing for the last 5 years about NIL and transfer portal. Who's going to control anything? It's weak. They're all weak. The whole organization is weak. You're going to have a coach that out and out. I mean, they cheated. They say whatever you wanted to. They cheated. You're going to have them. He's going to get off scot-free, Harbaugh. Connor Stallions is going to be all over social media and all in, you know, Ann Arbor as the hero, conquering hero. And Sharon Moore gets left to pick up the pieces. Sharon Moore, here you deal with a 2-game suspension. And obviously last year's kind of up and down season with all the transition that you kind of had to go deal with. But ultimately, Michigan gets no punishment. There's no punishment here. No. And so what is the deterrent to cheat? There is no deterrent. And so, Kalen DeBoer, you can hire me. I will leave my position, and you can send me across the country to all the future scouts. I'll take my little camcorder, and I'll write down, oh, every time the coach taps his head, the defense goes cover 3. Every time the coach does his hands this way, they're on speed option, whatever the case may be. We can put it together because there is no punishment anymore. And this is just, I'm sorry, I would much rather Michigan have just said, nah, we're not. Like, this is Michigan doing, you're alluding to it with the Louisville thing. This is Michigan trying to, oh, see, we punished ourselves. a 2-game suspension for a season that got you a national championship, that won you a national championship, that reestablished you. I mean, Theo, you didn't listen to the program on Thursday, but we talked Blue Bloods, who is and who is a Blue Blood. Michigan is reestablished. I mean, to me, they always were, but you're reestablished as a Blue Blood by winning another national championship. I don't know what the right word is, but the element of the big farce. I mean, it's all a big farce that we're playing. The NCAA is a farce. The rules that we're all agreeing to are all just loose suggestions per se. And I don't really know like a great way forward.
Kalen DeBoer would suspend himself 2 games in a heartbeat if it meant a championship.
Yes!
What coach wouldn't? Like, seriously. And this was my huge problem after the Houston Astros scandal, because I think it's a pretty good comparison. Leagues that were too scared to take any action against people who egregiously violated rules.
I'm telling you, would you care if your team cheated to win a championship?
No.
Look, I've never seen the Chicago Bears win a Super Bowl. I do not care if the Bears are advanced scouting the Packers, or you know, if Caleb Williams got deflated footballs, uh-huh. or you know, I don't care. Like, the elation is enough, right? So you get people. I've got you know. Are you familiar with English soccer?
I am.
All right, so I'm mildly. Follow it, and I mildly like Man City just because they're the new team on the block, right?
That's a great example.
Right, exactly. So they're the new team on the block as of, 2006 or so, and they get bought by huge money, and they're cheating in big ways. They're overspending. Their financial, you know, the finances are all murky. What money's going to what team? What money's going to what place? And the old heads are, this is not right. Okay, all right, whatever. Fast forward. Essentially, you got the fans of Liverpool, Man United, and Chelsea going, well, just wait. All those titles will be revoked. All those championships will be taken away. All those rings, all the silverware in England will be taken out of the trophy case. Guess what? I still watched City watch them win those games. I still remember in 2011 winning the English Premier League, like basically at the last second and going crazy. That, yeah. Yes, Sergio Aguero.
That was awesome.
I mean, I lost my mind as a fan, like lost my ever loving mind. You want to take that away in the record book? Okay, I do not give one rip. Like, NCAA is going to come back and say Michigan. I'm listening to myself 2 minutes ago saying they should take away their title. They're going to take away their title. The Michigan fans won't care. Mm-hmm. Connor Stallions won't care. Jim Harbaugh won't care. J.J. McCarthy, none of them. Like, we won the title. We know what happened on the field. All those Michigan fans will know, hey, we were there when we saw Alabama lose to Michigan in the Rose Bowl. Like, what are we doing with this sport, Theo? What are we doing with this sport?
And at the end of the day, like, if I'm out, in any situation, out at the on the street, walking around at a bar, whatever, and I see an Astros fan, I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to talk about, you guys robbed us of a World Series. Altuve robbed Judge of an MVP.
But they don't care.
They don't care.
Right.
Because they won.
And so, Connor, Sherrone Moore suspended for 2 games. And I guess I'm going to rest right here, land the plane right here, that this is, one, it's weak by Michigan, because what's a 2-game suspension? Nothing.
And one of the games is Central Michigan.
Right.
The other one's Nebraska, which, okay, that's actually one of their tougher Big Ten matchups, but still.
It's weak by Michigan. It's weak by the NCAA.
That's all.
The whole situation annoys me. We'll just say that. Theo, you got anything else on this before I move on?
I think annoyed is a very good way to put it. And first of all, I really...
Because it's selective justice.
It's selective justice. You know, and they decided, you know what? Connor Stallions can take the fall. And first of all, Connor Stallions, the guy's a football genius. I really recommend doing some reading, watch something on Connor Stallions. It's a fascinating guy. And he may never coach Division I football, which is something that he absolutely, without a doubt, would have done if this hadn't happened, he might be the one guy who takes the fall.
But he, but like, what's the fall for him? He's now Michigan's folklore hero.
Yeah, right. Everyone in that state that's not an MSU fan loves him. He'll never pay for a drink in Ann Arbor. And you see him, like, he was like, went out partying with like some of the players and stuff. Like, he's still tight with the whole team.
Yeah, he's embraced the villain role. He's embraced the I didn't get any, you know, of course he's not working college football the way he probably wants to, but like, other than that, what punishment did he really get?
And I would, by the way, I'm an NFL team. I would love to hire that guy. Seriously.
Michigan, wasn't he the offensive coordinator for Underwood, Bryce Underwood, for a second?
Yes.
What was that about?
I literally think he went in to help convince him to Michigan.
Yes.
Like, that's another, he's still so tied in. He's probably getting money under the table.
Probably.
No, he's got to be, right?
Yeah, I think that is.
Do you think a fraction of that $15 million check got slid over to him?
Yes, yeah, I do. Right? I think it'd be foolish to consider to think otherwise. Well, okay, I'm annoyed, but what's new, right? Michigan going to be any good this year? No. Bryce Underwood, you're going to throw him out there. You saw that weird, what was that, like a reverse pass, something at their spring game that was just a little.
It was ugly.
Yeah, so I'm fired up because of Select Justice. That's why I'm fired up. I'm not fired up because I think Michigan's going to matter that much. And I don't really think that Sherrone Moore, like, I think he's a good, you know, I think he's a B-plus coach. Yeah, I think he's a B-plus, A-minus coach. I don't think he's an elite coach. But I think that he's loyal to Michigan, just like the rest. I mean, when you're in the crime family, we're all loyal to each other, to ourselves.
Now, I think there's one other very interesting thing to look at.
Yeah, please.
How, like, does this embolden other schools to push boundaries and try new things? I mean, think about.
All right, Theo, what would you try?
I don't know, but, like, the stuff that Connor Stallions did, I find it hard to believe that in the 100-plus year history of college football, no one's, like, it seems like such an easy thing to try. You know, and it also seems like if you make the, I don't know, like, I fully believe that Alabama, the University of Alabama, Kalen DeBoer could call up a low-level staffer. It doesn't even have to be an official staffer. You could call up, like, a student or something.
Right.
Say, hey, we're going to fly you out to this game. You got the hotel paid for. You get tickets to a football game. All you got to do is take a couple videos for me.
The issue is,
like, I just,
I think that would be fine. I see your premise. But my pushback is, Kalen DeBoer, you can't distrust any random student. You can't distrust any random low-level staffer. The reason that this worked for Michigan was because of Connor Stallions and because of the point you alluded to, how really smart he is and really just, okay, I'm going to put the puzzle together. These signs mean these things. And I think Connor Stallions had himself his own little small team that helped him do this stuff.
I don't know what ways there are to cheat. I don't know what rules there are to bend, but I know that coaches,
they're always trying to do it,
are innovative enough to find them. I think there's really no real deterrent to not.
Oh, no, cheat. There's not a deterrent to cheat. No, not at all. There's not a deterrent to cheat in recruiting. There's not a deterrent to cheat in.
None of this is new. Like,
yeah, no,
tried to cheat at recruiting forever, but there used to be actual punishment for that. It used to be, oh, your coach can get fired.
Somewhat. Yeah, your coach can get fired, but, like, real punishment. And people are going to throw in, you know, 2005, 2006, Alabama, Albert Means stuff, and you go under the tank. Okay, you were, you know, in NCAA probation. But look how quickly Alabama bounced back once they hired the right coach. You got Nick Saban, and it was 13 months later, boom, you're back to being national power.
I would, like,
this is going to show a little age a little bit, but I don't know that any program's really been punished since SMU. SMU, they end the program for what, two year death penalty?
Yeah.
And the SMU's never really recovered. And I believe that the NCAA saw that and was like, ooh, we are never going to do that to a program again because of it never really recovering. Otherwise, Miami would have gotten it twice. Mm-hmm. And look, this isn't about anti-Hurricanes, but like, there are programs that would have qualified for the death penalty. And maybe SC in the 2000s with the Reggie Bush stuff. The issue is I don't really think the punishment is real. And the main form of punishment, which is vacating bowl games and vacating wins, and, you know, Nick Saban, I'm pretty sure his official record for the first year, he lost those wins off his official record because of the textbook scandal. I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, he went 7-6 in the first year, but I'm pretty sure if you look at the NCAA record, it might say 1-6, I think. Wow.
And we all agree that vacating wins is one of the dumbest things.
Right. That's my point.
Yeah.
Like, it means nothing. It means nothing at all. I watched Man City win those titles. Michigan fans watched Michigan win those championships. Alabama fans, we watched Nick Saban win those games the first. Look, you ain't never going to take away that first, the DJ Hall performance against Tennessee in 2007. Say whatever you want about DJ Hall in this house, but you will not forget that performance against Tennessee and just starting that 17-year streak. I don't care that the NCAA says, well, you sold your textbooks back, Sonny. You guys are ineligible now. Like, what a terrible deterrent. What a terrible deterrent.
Nobody is affected by that.
And you fast forward, I'm thinking about AJ Green doing autographs on his uniform, getting suspended for 2 or 3 games at Georgia. Like
Johnny Manziel trading what is trophy for a tattoo.
Like, yeah, that was a slap on the wrist for AJ, but AJ still won the first round, and AJ was still a great player, and AJ still kept, you know. Basically, this show started off as the NCAA's week, I guess.
Which is not, and nobody... I don't think there's a single person that's not employed by the NCAA that's going to disagree with anything that we're saying.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we need to move into something else. How about... All right. We're going to cross off our list here. Sharon Moore suspended, self-imposed. Crossed you off. Bam. How about Josh Jacobs?
All right.
Before we get into Josh Jacobs, we want to remind you, of course, that we are in the Derrick Daniels State Farm Studios right off of McFarland Boulevard. You can find us just past the Tiger Rock on the left, right past Rustic Rehab as well. Derrick Daniel and his team are upstairs, Red, Reese, and Victoria. They would love to talk to you about your insurance needs, home, life, auto insurance needs, renter's insurance needs, boater's insurance. Theo's about to move from one apartment to another. He's going to make sure that he's got great renter's insurance by calling Derrick Daniel at 205-758-3391. One, because he knows that the landlords, the apartment games in Tuscaloosa, not always up to snuff. Some of them great, but not always up to snuff. And to protect yourself, you have good renter's insurance by calling Derrick Daniel at 205-758-3391.
You know, my apartment this year, Hub Tuscaloosa, they overcharged me $125 a month for the first 8 months of my lease. Didn't even know it until me and my roommates, like, I fully would have been screwed out of about, you know, $1,700-$1,800.
What did they charge you that for? For insurance purposes or just overcharging your rent?
They charged me for a VIP room with a balcony, like the highest level room. I'm just staying in a standard 4x4, and me and my roommate...
Theo's got the king suite.
My roommate's talking about, like, oh, yeah, I can't believe rent is this much. And I, like, I'm paying $125 more. And, yeah. Get your renter's insurance. Make sure, especially in Tuscaloosa, that these landlords aren't messing with you. Take it from me.
There you go. 205-758-3391 for all of your insurance needs. All right, so last week, Theo, Thursday's episode was so bad, bro. If you go back and listen to it, I was supposed to talk Thursday about Alabama's defense. I got in, and I got distracted, and we talked Texas, and we talked all kinds of, and like, I woke up Thursday morning and listened to the Pivot podcast, listened to the Josh Jacobs episode so that I could come in and talk about it, and totally didn't even, just whoop, ADHD out the window. But you're familiar with Pivot, Ryan Clark, you've got Fred Taylor, you got Channing Crowder.
Yeah. Fred. I'm vague. I'm not super familiar, but I've heard some of their stuff.
Yeah, so they had Josh Jacobs on this past week. And are you familiar with his story at all?
Not fully.
Ooh, he needs a
refresher.
Really, really, really good 45 minutes for any Alabama fan who's looking to get to know Josh Jacobs a little bit better. Really, really strong 45 minutes. And he talked about the Green Bay Packers as well. So if you're into that, you can get your Packers juice off of that as well. What the main thing that I wanted to bring up from that experience, from that interview, is Josh's relationship with Henry Ruggs, continued relationship with Henry Ruggs, and the prospect of Henry Ruggs getting out of jail and getting another NFL shot. So you're not familiar. If you are, the Henry Ruggs, Josh Jacobs, college teammates, go to the Raiders together, basically year apart, and tragedy really of your own doing. Henry Ruggs, DUI accident, and I guess it's a involuntary manslaughter when it's on an accident.
Yeah.
So unfortunately killed a young lady and her dog and has been incarcerated ever since. But I am reading that Henry Ruggs is up for parole very soon and could be finding himself out of jail within the year, and basically Josh Jacobs alluded to, hey, he's working out, he's been training, he's keeping his body right in jail. I mean, the man is still young. What you think, Henry Ruggs back in the NFL? How do you feel about that, Theo?
Look, I'm very young, 20 years old, and I see, you know, how easy it is to make mistakes in life. I make mistakes. I see my friends make mistakes. I see everyone mess up a lot. It's an egregious thing that happened, to be driving drunk 156 miles per hour, kill a woman and her dog right on. It's horrible.
Terrible.
I don't know if the point of prison is to reform somebody.
Yep.
And if he's done everything right, and it, you know, would it be crazy to say that, you know, if he's really doing everything the right way, getting off early for good times, you know, staying in shape, apologizing for his action, I think, you know, your life shouldn't be over at the age of 22, you know? I believe in second chances personally, and I think you would have to go about all this the right way. I think you'd have to be extremely sincere, extremely genuine and open about everything. And I think that's the only way that I would be able to accept this, that most people would be able to. But, you know, the NFL gives second chances to just about everybody. I mean, Michael Vick. That was a horrific story, and he's back years later. I'm not going to go out and say that I don't think Henry Ruggs deserves another shot, but I think that it has to be done fully the right way. And if that happens, I'd be happy to see a man turn his life around and get back to doing what he was born to do.
Henry Ruggs is eligible for parole August 5th, 2026. So you're looking at, what, 16 months, 14 months from now, roughly, 15, 16 months from now, roughly. And he will be, at that point, 27. He's 26 now. He turned 26 in January of this year. And, look, Josh Jacobs was like, man, I should have been out there with him. I was supposed to be out there with him. We had talked about being out there together. And what did he say that he was doing instead? I think he said he was watching a movie and ended up falling asleep and turned over and was like, hey, man, I'm not coming. And essentially, Josh Jacobs says that he went to the family's house after Ruggs's and read them the riot act, read them that, how could you let him, you know, why did y'all let him by himself do and this? He's the breadwinner of your family. You guys need to protect, basically all over the family. And it sounds like, oh, that's okay. Great. Awesome. We lost connection to our camera, but that's okay. They can still hear us. I'll connect it in just a second once I finish this. But it sounded like Josh and Henry are still very close. To me, what I immediately thought of, Theo, was Michael Vick. Because for me, Michael Vick, most electric football player in my childhood. He gets a big old scandal and then it's all into prison. And I thought, what in the world? He's gone forever. And he even got a second chance. I know that there was a huge backlash about his second chance at that time. But if he can get a second chance, look, leave it up to the legal system. If they're going to give him parole, then if they're going to give him parole, then I'm not here to stop him. The NFL is really in the business of finding talent and putting them to good use. So look, there we go. We're back on it. I didn't even do anything.
Perfect.
Magician. Yeah, it made me think of Michael Vick. It makes me think of Michael Vick. He goes away 2 years and people are talking about, oh, he's never going to get another shot. He's never going to get another chance. And then he did. He ended up with the Eagles. Was it with someone else as well?
Jets after that.
Jets. Okay. Yeah. Eagles was my, the main one that I remember. Look, second chances for everybody. Reading right here that odds are, this is just speculation. Different people says tying Henry Ruggs to the Carolina Panthers as a team to watch next year. Just because of wide receiver need, the connection of Bryce Young, even though Bryce didn't play with Henry, but looks like just kind of their setup of their franchise is what some of these pundits are saying. Now, if you're not familiar with Josh Jacobs, I do want to encourage you to listen to this. You know, he was homeless. He grew up homeless.
Wow.
For portions of his childhood. What I found out, which was really interesting, I knew the homelessness part, but homelessness via divorce. Basically, father and mother divorce, and father ends up taking on Jacobs and the kids and living with father in hotel rooms and in the backs of cars until father can get on his feet. And essentially, it's like, you know, Alabama got really kind of fortunate to fall into him. He was like a no-star recruit. He was not on the radar.
I remember him like being a low profile guy
because he wasn't recruited. Like it wasn't like you know how the okay Theo, you're hotshot sophomore. You go to rivals camp and they see you. You get 4 stars. You go to 24/7 camp. They see you. You get 4 stars.
Yeah.
You get all these things.
It's all about like, the camp.
So. But you got to go. Right. You got to go. You got to put yourself out there. You got to press the flesh and say yes, sir, and pay your money to the camps, that sort of thing. And then it becomes Theo Fernandez, 4-star outside linebacker, and everybody loves Theo. Well, if you are a homeless person or growing, you know, if your father is battling homelessness, we'll say that. If your father's battling homelessness and you don't go to these camps, then you're just reliant on high school tape, which his high school tape was filthy, but you're not out there paying the money to go to the camps and stuff. He got basically, if you don't have any stars, rivals 24/7 on 3, you're a 3-star recruit. There's like no such thing as a 2-star, 1-star recruit anymore. It's basically if you are registered in the system, you're at least a 3-star recruit. And so Josh Jacobs was a 3-star recruit. What ends up happening is his high school tape is so good that a coach from Texas is scouting someone else on film is like, whoa, who is that guy? And they get in contact and he says, okay, we don't need a running back, but I'm going to get your tape out there, and explodes. And from there, Nick Saban, Burton Burns, they were like, yeah, we need this guy.
And that was a great decision.
Yeah, incredible.
That's an understatement and a half right there.
Incredible. And so Josh talks about on this podcast how the entire time at Alabama, the coaching staff and the players, his teammates are, hey man, you're really like that. Come on, you are. You're that guy. And Josh on this podcast talking about, well, I'm looking around, I'm third string. I'm looking around behind this person. I'm looking around behind that person, and I don't really buy it. But Burton Burns, the running backs coach at this time, is telling me that you're really one of the best guys that we've ever had come through here. And he's like, well, what? They ask him, like, so when did you actually feel this? And he said, oh, probably it took me to the Oklahoma game, that Orange Bowl, whatever that was that year, 2016 Orange Bowl, 17 Orange Bowl, where he goes crazy. And basically, details the fact that Nick Saban and Burton Burns and really everyone had to tell him to go to the draft. He wasn't going to go to the draft because he was like, I'm the third string running back. There's no way I'm a first rounder. Like, y'all are on hooey. Y'all are messing me up. You're messing with me. And basically, they had to like force him to go to the draft. And then he gets what? 12th pick, 15th pick, something. Was it 20?
It was mid late first round.
All right, by the Raiders, and
one of the few Raiders first round picks that panned out too.
Yeah, so he ends up talking about finances, talking about okay, because he was the Raiders. They were in California, Oakland for a little bit. He deferred his signing bonus because of the finances from California to Vegas, right? The state, the taxes, the state taxes from California and Vegas. He says, so the first couple of years he was living, it was like, I wasn't like broke like I was before, but I wasn't doing the things like my teammates were. Like every dollar was pretty much accounted for. And he said, by the time we moved to Vegas, that's when he ended up buying his dad a house. And just, it was a great 48 minutes. It was really, really fun listening to the Saban stories, listening to Josh Jacobs, listening to him to talk about Henry Ruggs. He did say a lot of nice things about the Green Bay Packers and Green Bay, the people in Green Bay. So if you listen to the show and you think I hate Green Bay too much, well, there is someone that thinks that it's a nice place. He compared it to college fans. He said, oh, they're just a different type up here. He said, everybody, you can go 20 blocks one way and 20 blocks another, and everybody works for the Packers in some kind of way, whether it's in food or marketing or this or that. Or everybody, he said, everybody, the whole town is like a college town. Everybody works for the Packers, so everybody in the area is all pulling the same direction. He said, that's really, really cool. So
I got some great Packers stories from Chris Walsh a few days ago as we were driving to Birmingham to cover Mark Ingram.
No great Packers stories allowed.
Yeah, I mean, he living in Green Bay as a sports writer sounds like a very interesting time. It was great hearing that from him. And I'm sure he covered a lot of Bears losses during his time there.
Yeah, probably so. But we look forward. 2025. Here we go. 1-0 in 2025 against the Green Bay Packers.
Really?
Yeah, week 17 victory already.
There we go.
You already 1-0 before the next season's already started.
We'll see.
Caleb Williams has never lost at Lambeau Field.
We'll see how long that holds.
Another 50 years, we'll say. All right, Theo, let's change topics again. Before we do, we will tell everybody about Warren Tire and Auto.
So my name is Russ Warren, and I'm one of the owners here at Warren Tire. We started in 1961. My granddad... on University Boulevard, so we've been kind of a staple here in the Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama community since then. And so thankful to be in the third generation. And we have two locations now in Tuscaloosa. We're right here at the 15th Street location right now where we just do tires, brakes, and alignments mostly here. Our university location does oil changes, engine work, air conditioning work, front end work, the whole nine yards. And so any of our two locations, you can come check us out.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
All right, we're back live in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios. We appreciate Warren Tire and Auto for sponsoring the program. You guys are watching us on the Bama Central YouTube channel, on Facebook, on my own social media machines. You're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify. Go follow Theo Fernandez at @Theo__. Myself at JoeGaither6. Let's keep going here with a very small topic here, Theo. I don't watch a whole lot of golf. I like to play golf from time to time. I'm very bad at golf, but I need all the additives that I can get. I need the nicer clubs. I need the golf cart. I need the range finder. I need every little thing that I can get, every piece of advantage I can get. Apparently, some of those advantages will get you in trouble on the PGA Tour. Davis Riley, former Alabama golfer, There we go. Let's bring it home. Former Alabama golfer Davis Riley on his in his Saturday round. And what is this? What is this event that we were at? I just saw it. It was a CP something. It was a, oh my gosh, help me out. CJ Cup Byron Nelson.
I was about to say Byron Murphy, and I'm like, no, that's a cornerback for the Ravens. And I was trying to get it out of my head.
CJ Cup Byron Nelson in Texas. So he finishes 45th. Which, okay, whatever. Why are we talking about somebody who finished 45th? It doesn't matter. Well, the reason we're talking about you, Davis Riley, is because you're an Alabama, former Alabama golfer, but because you made some headlines for your honesty this week. A very, very fun story. I don't know if this is fun. It's not fun, but I think it's a very good story. Davis Riley is on Saturday, and his Saturday round is on, I think it was a 17, I think is what I saw that. He's looking at a par three. He's looking at a par three and using a rangefinder. Apparently on a rangefinder, there is a setting to calculate the slope upwards or downwards. Obviously, if it's downwards, you need to be calculating that and take less club. If it's upwards, take more club. You guys are smart. You can figure it out. Davis Riley uses the club, uses the rangefinder with the slope factor. I think that is the aspect that is the key here, the slope factor, and sticks his tee shot to about 12, 10 feet or so. Ends up parring the hole and realizes, oh, I need to speak up about this. I don't know. This story just came across my, you know, purview and is on my list because of the honesty factor. Davis Riley did not have to speak up, but says, hey, when I looked through my rangefinder, I saw two different numbers. I saw one number for the distance, and I saw another number for the actual slope, and I know that that is against the rules. I'm not supposed to use that second number, and even though I probably just saw it for half a second, it's enough. It's enough to be in my mind, and it's enough to, you know, give me a competitive advantage over my playing partners, and thus I need to self-report it. Davis Riley took a two-stroke penalty on Saturday and ultimately didn't. I mean, come on. You cost yourself two strokes. It would have taken you to tied for 33rd, which is not going to take you that much higher into any money, I don't believe. So didn't really cost himself as far as, hey, you won or you lost. But I do think that it's a fun story as far as honesty. Theo, you remember the story? Or not the story. You remember the commercial, the sportsmanship, pass it on, where the guy, it's the basketball game, and a pass gets passed, and it tips off the one hand. The ref calls it one way, and the player goes, oh, yes. Coach, it was me. I tipped it.
Whole team's yelling at the guy.
Yes, that's what this reminds me of. It's like, nice of you, Davis. Honestly, nice of you. Good of you. But, okay. It shows your character, and that's what I want to commend. Great, strong character, but you didn't need to do this. I don't know. I don't have much more of this as far as like a point here. I just thought it was an interesting story. I thought it was a good story to show Davis Riley's character, but also just how uptight golf is.
Second time we're talking about self-imposed punishments on the show today. This one's a much better story than the first one. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a good move. Gains respect from everybody, you know. Two-stroke penalty wasn't, like you said, we're looking at pennies on the dollar compared to what golfers can make. You know, the difference from what, 45th to 33rd. I don't know what the prize money's like.
Yeah, I think I saw Scottie Scheffler ended up with like $1.2 million.
Scheffler had one of the, he tied the 72-hole record. Like one of the best performances ever.
Yeah, Scotty, his earnings, it looks like 1.7 for winning the tournament.
Yeah, no, Scotty was magnificent. One thing I still don't fully get about golf, you know, Justin Thomas goes out, wins 2 weeks ago, and we haven't seen him since. Like, I know it's a long season, and guys kind of pick and choose from what I understand, but wouldn't you want to keep, like, if you're playing well, if you're on a hot streak, wouldn't you want to keep that going?
Well, what's the schedule like? Because he's probably taking it off for a reason. Hold on. This is me not knowing what's coming up next on the schedule. PGA Tour schedule, because there's probably a good reason.
I'm trying to get more into golf.
The schedule is, let's see. Okay, this coming week, Truist Championship, One Flight, Myrtle Beach. Okay, so May 15th, PGA Championship in Charlotte. There's your major. I bet you he's been off for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I bet you he's going to ramp back up this week and try to get ready for this PGA Championship.
Try
to keep the game pretty, you know, flush for that PGA Championship. Everything for these golfers is about these majors. Let's see. May, Truist, One Flight, PGA, Charles Schwab, end of May, Memorial Canadian Open in June, U.S. Open, June 12th. So you're about to go into a
big month of golf.
Right. You're about to go into a big month. Two majors coming up in the next 6 weeks is what this looks like. Quail Hollow Golf Club at the PGA, PGA. That's a famous one. And Oakmont for the U.S. Open, which is also a famous one as well. Don't ask me any details about those. I just know they're famous clubs. Scottish Open, Renaissance Club, the Open Championship at Royal Port Rush in middle of July. So Justin, great for Justin to get a win. I bet you he's just taking another week or so just to get ready for these majors, major season coming up.
Very understandable.
All right, Theo, let's get into something a little more fun here. Davis Riley, golf. All right, scratch you off. I have two more. I have Jalen Milroe, Tyler Booker, and I have a Florida State thoughts. Let's go pro football, right?
Let's do that.
All right. So we're going to talk about Jalen Milroe. We're going to talk about Tyler Booker. Let's have a little fun in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios. Look, we're all excited about Tyler Booker. We're all excited about Jalen Milroe. We're all excited about everybody who got drafted this past weekend from the Crimson Tide. Actually, 2 weekends now. Man, time flies. I just had a thought as I was trying to come up with a creative conversation here. Who's going to have a bigger second contract? Will it be Tyler Booker, the first-round draft pick, or will it be Jalen Milroe, the third-round draft pick? And what this kind of comes down to, Theo, is what Jalen Milroe does over these 4 years. Because if Tyler plays at a high level, if you play like a first-rounder, you're going to get paid like a first-rounder. We looked up before the show that Quentin Nelson signed a 3-year, $80 million deal as a guard. What about Zach Martin's last contract? I know he just retired, but he is who really Tyler Booker's replacing. Zach Martin's last contract was 2 years, $40 million, essentially. So almost $20 million a year.
The highest paid guard is actually Landon Dickerson.
Oh, thank you. Roll Tide.
4 years, 84.
4 years, 84. So that's like 21 or so. Yeah. That's roughly 21, 22 million.
You've got about 10. You've got 10 guys in the league right now making more than 15 million a year.
All right. So that's a good number right there. That's a good number right there. Let's use 20 as a benchmark, because in 3 years, the number's going to go.
Everything in
three, right? Well, we'll use 20 as the benchmark here. If Jalen Milroe shows himself as a starting quarterback over these 3 years, I mean, the answer is obvious. It's Milroe. The positional value, it is what it is.
Booker has almost no control in this answer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, the control that the Booker has is show up and block well. Mm-hmm. Show up, be healthy, and block well, which I think those are things that he's capable of. I mean, health is kind of a question, because it just is one of those luck factors. But if Tyler Booker is healthy, knowing him, he will show up and he will block his tail off. Yeah. He might get beat a time or two, but he's going to give you tip-top effort.
I honestly believe that, knock on wood, too, stays healthy. As long as that happens, he will be a top 15 guard in football
by
the end of his rookie contract.
I agree with
that. I don't think that's a hot take at all.
I don't think so either. I don't think that's that hot either. So the question is really around Jalen Milroe. So we looked at Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold this year signed 3 years, $100 million. What did he sign before this? Sam Darnold with the Minnesota Vikings. Darnold, actually, I want to see Geno Smith with the Seahawks. Geno Smith.
Geno got a big extension after having that first year of playing well.
All right, so Geno feels like a good comparison, because I want this year right here. Okay, after the Chargers year, you get signed like for almost nothing by the Seahawks, and then you really explode. You have how many good years? One, three. Basically, your Seahawks years, 20, 40, almost $50 million across 6 years for him.
Closer to 60, a little, because he got paid those last 2 years on the deal.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Exactly. Six years, $60 million. If your math is a little better than me. So basically $10 million a year for the Seahawks. Yeah. Obviously, you're starting.
The first 3 years, you're getting peanuts.
He starts with the Jets, gets drafted. Okay. It's basically a question of, will Jalen be a starter? If he's a starter, then you're making upwards of 52. You're making upwards of 48 to 61 in that range, but you project 4 years ahead. Because right now, Tua is making like 53, and Jalen's making like 55. Period. Is Jalen Milroe going to work himself into a starter?
Right. That's what this question has turned into. And I think the answer will be yes.
Woo!
I do.
Woo!
Elaborate a little. Why?
I think we talked about this a couple weeks back, but my take on Seattle is that they're not very good right now.
True.
They need more offensive weapons. Sam Darnold's going to go out there. He's going to struggle. He's going to regress from what he did last year.
Yeah,
you know,
that's inevitable.
And there's, look, at the end of the day, I mean, Seattle's talented enough where they could go 9-8, 8-9. I think they'll be worse, but there's definitely, you know, wild card is an outside possibility. I don't think that's going to come to fruition. I'm seeing like a 6-11 season there. They respond by adding pieces. They draft guys, maybe sign a couple guys. And, you know, you basically keys to the offense given to Jalen Milroe, because we know that Milroe is going to impress everybody in Seattle. Coaches are going to love him. Teammates are going to love him. He'll be working his ass off the whole time he's there. I really think that we will see Milroe take over as the starter next year. And look, we know better than everybody that Jalen Milroe is not a perfect quarterback. I think there's a clear path for him to succeed in the NFL. I think we'll see him do it. And I also think that we will be in a state where in 3 years, there won't be a single starting QB getting paid under $20 million a year.
Oh, well, no. Yeah, definitely not.
Right. Like, it's, I think that he will be pulling in over $80 million on his next contract. For Jalen Milroe.
And that's pretty much the answer. Will it be, you know, 4 years, $80 million for Tyler Booker, 4 years, probably 120, 130, yeah. 150 for Jalen Milroe?
I mean, those numbers just keep climbing and climbing. Like,
it's not even real.
I remember just how stunned I was. Just the absolute double take that I did, like, in 2020. Mahomes, 10 years, $500 million was egregious to me.
Were you watching football before the rookie wage scale?
I wasn't, but I remember hearing like
Sam Darnold,
Sam Bradford, you know, holding out because getting a huge contract. That was absurd to me.
Yeah, I think what was Bradford an $80 million signing bonus? I think it was something
absurd,
really stupid.
First contract was the biggest of his career.
Oh, wild. All right, so Jalen.
You know, Matt.
Go ahead.
Quick.
No, please.
The rate that guys would like hold out at now, could you imagine trying to have rookies negotiate contracts right now?
No, the Bears will get screwed over every time.
It would be unreal.
We would have paid Caleb Williams like $500 million right from the jump.
Shadur asking for $30 million to be a fifth round pick.
Hey, man, if you don't pay me, you're just hating. You're just hating on me.
Let's never go back to that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, were you like me though? Over the weekend, over this week and weekend, the Seattle Seahawks posted. I mean, yes, it was rookie minicamps and OTAs, getting them in. But the Seattle Seahawks made him look like a big-time quarterback on the social media machine.
I got fired up seeing that.
Yeah.
I got excited.
They tweeted about him a lot. It was a lot of Jalen Milroe video, a lot of seven-yard out, a lot of here, watch him slow motion drop back video. So whether he will be or not, the social media team definitely leaned into Jalen Milroe as our future.
And Milroe is such an easy guy to love, and the fan base learned that fast. You know, like, the fan base has seen all the things that he said. You look at the comments under those posts, looking at the interviews. I mean, there was a mixed reaction among Seahawks fans. Now, I did my due diligence here. Two of my best friends are actually Seattle fans, and I asked, like, okay, what do your families think? Like, what's the sentiment right now? And it's a lot more positive now than it was when he was drafted. Like, already he's winning people over. I guarantee
he's that just getting 1%. He's just getting 1% better every day.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, and that's he's very on brand for
controlling Miller. The controllables.
Yeah, any of those cliches you want to use, right? You know, and if what I'm saying really is true, like if Darnold really does go out there and struggle, people are instantly going to be calling for Milroe to take the field, which praying it doesn't happen this year for Milroe's sake, which I don't think it will. We talked about this a few weeks ago where it's like you can't pay a guy $100 million and then not let him start the whole year. But God, like, it's going to be a real controversy, I think, as soon as Darnold starts struggling. And the reason it's going to be this controversy is because of how right Milroe is going to do everything.
I'm excited for it. I think that it's going to be a very interesting 2025 season, and Jalen Milroe is going to be part of it. Let's hit this last topic, Theo, because I think it might be our best of the day.
Agreed.
Warren Tire and Auto, they've been at Tuscaloosa and University of Alabama staple since 1961, and we're so proud that they are sponsoring the Joe Gaither Show. Warren Tire and Auto, they're in the third generation of family ownership. They're your go-to place for all your automotive needs. They've got two great locations. They can serve you for tires, brakes, and alignment. Check them out on 15th Street at 205-759-5505. For all your other automotive needs, you got oil changes, you got electrical work, you got AC work. You can see them on University Boulevard at 205-758-2739. Two great locations to get you in and out, back on the road, and back on your life. Warren Tire and Auto, a Tuscaloosa staple and a proud sponsor of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. All right, we love message boards. We love it because they give us great topics. And in recently scrolling, I'm seeing this from an Alabama fan. The Florida State game. Season opener. The Florida State game is a trap game. Alabama needs to be ready. The Florida State game is a trap game. Alabama could step into a trap. And, all right, this immediately sent my brain buzzing because my first thought is, hello, you cannot have a trap game to open the year. It's just not possible. It's not a thing. By definition, a trap game is never the season opener. You can never have it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's the worst team in the world and you've got a great team in week number two. It doesn't matter. The season opener is not a trap game, period. That's the first part of my take. The next part, what this comment sent me is, okay, well, Florida State is not a trap game because it's the first game of the year, and it cannot be a trap game. Maybe if ULM was the first game of the year and Alabama was going to Florida State the next week, even the ULM game would not be a trap game. Maybe if it was ULM, Florida State, Wisconsin, ULM, Florida State, Georgia, maybe that Florida State game could be considered. But the season opener, by default, cannot be a trap game. Okay.
Yeah.
So is there a trap game on this Alabama schedule?
It's, well, without even knowing off the top of my head, I'm going to say week after Georgia, you can pencil that in as a trap game.
The week after Georgia. All right. You're a smart fan, Theo. I think that's a smart place to start.
Which I'm curious. Who are we playing?
But I'll tell you why it's not a trap game. Because the week after Georgia, the mighty Vanderbilt Commodores come into Tuscaloosa. And you better believe these Alabama players and coaches are sick and tired of seeing gold and black and white and highlights and Vanderbilt. You better believe that Diego Pavia is a curse word in the Malmore Athletic facility, that Eli Stowers is curse words in that facility. So, no, I'm sorry.
That is not a trap game.
It's not a trap game. I love you. Good answer. Good guess. Not a trap game. How about
any other opponent could have been?
Right. I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you. You could have played Mercer the next week, and I'd say, yep, you're right, trap game. You could have played Western Tech Carolina, and yep, trap game. But no, you bring the Vanderbilt Comet. If you'd have brought Vandy, Tennessee or Oklahoma in, it's not a trap game.
None of those.
And Vandy being the first, because look, you lose to Tennessee, you lose to Oklahoma, that stuff happens. That's you look through the record book, it's happened before, it's probably going to happen again.
Vandy.
Sorry, guys.
Like, I see Missouri on the road the week after.
Maybe.
Like, that could be.
I think that might be your only option here.
Because you're also looking ahead to Tennessee the week after.
My take was no trap game on the schedule at all, period. We'll just walk right through it real quick. Florida State, at Florida State, home for ULM, home for Wisconsin, at Georgia, home for Vanderbilt, at Missouri, home for Tennessee, at South Carolina, home for LSU, home for Oklahoma, home for Eastern Illinois, and then on the road to the Cal College to take on the Auburn Tigers.
I think South Carolina is getting a lot of hype right now. Exactly. People are very much on that train. So I would anticipate that, you know, we're going to go in and that'll be a ranked matchup. If stuff kind of goes off the rails a little for South Carolina, then we might get into a situation where it's like, okay, you know, because it's sandwiched between Tennessee and LSU. That one has potential to be a trap game if the season kind of doesn't go South Carolina's way.
Are you an EDM fan? You're young. Do you like EDM?
Not in the slightest. It's the worst kind of music.
It's not real music.
It's not real music.
You put it in a computer, it's not real music. If you're not playing, if you're not playing an instrument, it's not real music.
Yeah.
But you know what Sandstorm is?
I'm aware.
Yeah. That's the... See, the schedule is set up so nicely, psychologically, for Alabama.
It is.
Because, all right, you got to get up for Florida State, right? We're up for it. Baby, let's go. We're going on the road. It's a hostile environment and, big-time brand. You got
to
get up for
it. A team that has a lot, everything to prove this year.
It's great. It sets up perfect. Then you come back home. You come back home and you get your kind of cupcake-ier game with ULM. That's going to kind of keep your gears warm. And then Wisconsin comes in. And look, what you did last year at Wisconsin was fun. I think it becomes that times two at home, especially in year number two with a little bit different quarterback.
I mean, we're talking about it like people talk about trap games. But at the same time, I
don't think Wisconsin has the talent to actually beat you at home like Wisconsin, like Vanderbilt. You could have said, oh, Vanderbilt didn't have the talent. Well, no, they didn't, but they did. They had just enough, and they were at home. Alabama was on. I think it's going to be – think about the teams that have beat Alabama here at home. It's been Texas. They went to a college football playoff. Like, it's few and far between who beats Alabama at home. Few and far between. So, Wisconsin here in Tuscaloosa, I'm not worried about. Now, at Georgia is not a trap game. It's a losable game. But it's going to be 8-3, 3-2. It's going to be 3-7, something like that, somewhere in that range.
Georgia, Tennessee, and LSU and Auburn, obviously, will never be trap games.
You can't, just by definition of who they are, it's not going to, we're getting up to play Auburn. We're getting up to play LSU, Tennessee, Georgia. Are you getting up to play these teams? All right, and then as we said, you get 28. The next week, you are back here at home against Vanderbilt, and you're going to get that you're probably too young for this too. 2016-17, you got the Vanderbilt defensive lineman. Vanderbilt goes under 3-0, 4-0. Alabama, you're next. Yeah, you're going to get that all over. Like, it's just going to be just burned.
What did Jalen Hurts say? Like, theoretically, we are next or something. What was the quote?
I don't remember.
It was something fun. Like, theoretically, yes, we are next. And then that game ended very well.
All right, so you beat the brakes off of Vanderbilt to avenge that. And you're going on the road to Missouri. Now, Missouri, Theo, you probably haven't ever listened, but I do love me some Eli Drinkwitz.
I think he is a genius.
Oh, okay, great.
I think he's a great coach.
Great minds think alike. Now, is he a weirdo? Absolutely. But I think he's just an X's and O's genius. But your problem is, it's like, what did Missouri do? Do at the quarterback position past Brady Cook? I don't see it talent-wise. And then same thing. You come back home, Tuscaloosa, to you're hosting Tennessee, and yeah, that game could go off the rails. But I think Tennessee's season kind of got derailed last week, 2 weeks ago, with Nico departing and them having to go out and get to what Aguilar. You hear Josh Heupel say, oh, we don't want to call this the Nico Iamaleava situation. We want to call this the Joey Aguilar situation.
Joey Aguilar is a talented quarterback.
Oh, don't he do is. This.
No, he is. He really impressed at App State, and he did what he could with a hard UCLA situation.
Do not do this.
Tennessee might win the Nico Iamaleava trade.
By value, because they're not paying someone $4 million. Yes.
But I'm just saying, do not discount this guy's abilities.
All right. Well, at this point on May 5th, I will discount this guy's abilities, and I will be open to egg on my face in September.
First of all, seems like a coachable guy. Second of all, and most importantly, just look at what Josh Heupel QBs do. You know?
I mean, it's a quarterback friendly system.
Yeah.
It sets you up.
Have to imagine that anything this guy can do will be maximized.
Then Alabama the next week. So I don't think this is a trap game, but I definitely think it's losable. Yeah. Because South Carolina comes into Tuscaloosa last year and really made things really challenging. Their defensive front was incredibly ferocious. Now, you moved on from some of those. Tonka Hemingway's moved on. Kyle Kennard, right, has moved on. You've got the freshman who's back. They said they paid him $1 billion. No. The defensive end. I don't care about the wide receiver. This ain't CFP. The Stewart, Evan, that's a wide receiver.
Evan Stewart's a receiver at Oregon, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I know exactly who you're talking. He's massive, this guy.
It is. Why don't we just find it? It is not Damian Clowney. It's not Justin Okoronkwo. What? And Dylan Stewart.
Yeah.
So they bring back Dylan Stewart. I mean, he was a monster last year.
Yeah, you can't have him at number two on the depth chart there.
Well, that's our lad, so.
Yeah,
Dylan Stewart, how many sacks did you have? He was a monster last year.
He was unreal.
Sean Alexander, freshman of the year finalist, freshman All-American, SEC defensive newcomer of the year, all that jazz. Great stuff. 6.5 sacks, 10.5 tackles for a loss, 23 total tackles, three forced fumbles. Yeah, he was a monster. So, you are going to South Carolina. And again, I don't think it's a trap game, but I do think it's absolutely losable. Being a losable game doesn't make it a trap game. A trap game is something that we overlook. That you're looking at the next opponent. And I think that South Carolina's talent and going into the sandstorm, we're going to be like tripping the entire week. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be all week long. No, I think that, if I'm killing the board, I'm doing the old Bear Bryant tactic where that song just lives in the playbook on the play sheet at Mount Moore. Just make them sick of it, right? But it's so good or good enough, and the environment is challenging enough to where you're not going to be overlooking it. That's the point.
Yeah, and we try not to overlook any. Like, you remember the story about how there were rat traps around the facility before Vanderbilt. Like, look how that ended up, you know.
How that ended up. Yeah. Not good. Definitely fell into the trap. And okay, you're still back. You get a week off. You get a week off, and then you're back at home with LSU. You ever going to overlook LSU? No, you're not. And then next week, you're back home again with Oklahoma. You're not overlooking Oklahoma after what they did last year. So, Theo, there is no trap game on this schedule.
We have three straight home games in November.
Four, right?
Well, then we go to Auburn.
Oh, Auburn, yeah. No, yeah. It's going to be great. There's no trap games on the schedule. You, after Oklahoma, just to round this out and land the plane, Eastern Illinois. Sorry, guys, not a trap game because the team has to be capable of beating you to be a trap game. And then you go to Auburn and the Iron Bowl is never going to be a trap game. Come on, be real.
Am I going to get to see some of that voodoo magic this year when I go to Jordan-Hare?
Oh, my gosh. That is a subject that I absolutely hate. Not because there is no such thing as Auburn Jesus, as Auburn voodoo. It drives me crazy when I hear the Alabama fan, well, you know, they got that voodoo going down there.
That's all I've heard about for 2 years.
Right. You know what it is? That's a weak excuse for not playing well. That's a weak excuse for not being for not taking the game. Well, that voodoo magic. That's to me, drives me. There is no such thing. Now, maybe that's a take that'll get me ostracized from the Alabama fan base, but I just do not believe in it. You make your own luck. You play well. You create your own circumstances. I'm sorry. Maybe it is a black and white perspective, but to me, no such thing as, well, just voodoo happened. No, I think that's a weak excuse.
Agreed, but I think it's very fun to think of Auburn as just like the... like just casting spells.
Why? Why? Because it gives them credit. It gives them credit that they don't deserve. That to me, they don't deserve. We're going to turn our rival into some spooky mythical. Oh, you know, sometimes they switch the switch, so they don't switch the switch on anyone else.
I mean, look,
they don't call the spells for any other game. The spells haven't led them to a national championship. An SEC championship or an SEC West championship? Not that that's a thing anymore, but.
I mean, I remember. I'm a bad example of this because every time that I've watched the Iron Bowl with any kind of rooting interest, you know, we've won it. I've never been broken by an Alabama loss to Auburn. So I kind of view it as a little bit of a joke right now. Like, you can say that I don't take Auburn football as seriously as I probably should. But in my time here, they've lost to New Mexico State and really done nothing of note. So I don't know. I guess I need like a wake-up call, which I keep hearing is going to happen sooner than later.
A lot of the Alabama fans automatically go to kick six, but that doesn't even register to me. It's the comeback. The comeback will forever haunt me. I was freezing cold. It was played on Black Friday, and I am a sophomore age. I was not enrolled in school, but I should have been a sophomore. And I was in the student section, beyond inebriated. And you're up 21-0, 24-0, and Mark Ingram's running for the end zone, and I'm just mother bleeping everybody I can see. And Mark Ingram fumbles through the end zone, rolls through. And I thought, oh, no big deal. It's 24-0 at halftime. It's okay. We didn't need that other touchdown. That would have just made it ridiculous, huh? Yeah, Cam Newton comes out with that bright, shining smile and finds Lutzenkirchen how many times, and smiled right in my face and said, gotcha. And that was really for nothing. It was, you know, not for Alabama's national championship. I was fueled by, oh, we're about to ruin this cheater. We're about to ruin this cheater season. They paid this guy. Do you know how much allegedly Cam got paid for that year?
I do not.
This is going to make you laugh. Guess. How much do you think, in my opinion, the greatest single season of college football is worth?
$100,000.
Wow. Okay, that was a better guess than I thought. 180 was the rumor at the time that Cam Newton's daddy got paid $180,000. Now, verify it or not, but that was the rumor. 180. Now you think about that with Nico Iamaliava and Joey Akula. It's insane.
Inflation.
Inflation and making it above board, right? But legal. What's that really? That Cam Newton season is worth $10 million.
Remember that we used to pay recruits amounts of money that were small enough to fit into McDonald's bags?
Right.
Like that, you know?
That Cam Newton season, honestly, is worth $10 million.
Oh, yeah.
Because, and that's a take that will get me in trouble. But to me, the greatest single season in college football for any one person, one wow. player, period. Look.
20-point Devonta Smith.
Better. I'm sorry. Why? Go look at the Auburn roster and tell me how many of those farm boys played in the NFL. Almost none. Almost none. And Cam Newton is saying, oh, hop on my back, boys. We're going down the field. We're going down the field. We're going to score. Like, they were he was unstoppable. People talk about want to talk about Joe Burrow in 2019. But like, I'm sorry. Like, the talent disparity is night and day. How many pros did Joe Burrow play with on that team? Devontae Smith, you
two
played.
Top five receivers.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And like, yeah, Joe Burrow, great year. Devontae Smith, 2020, great year. But like, you are playing with as we close this out, let's do this here. That was 2010, right? 2010 Auburn Tigers. I want you, you're a football head. How many of these people do you know? Stats, here we go. Let's see. 2020, they're 14 or no. Their leading receiver, receptions. Darvin Adams, their leading receiver for 960. Now, Darvin played in the league for a second, didn't he? Darvin played in the league. He got to the league, didn't he? Darvin Adams. I'm pretty sure he did. He was, oh gosh. Yeah, Carolina Panthers in Virginia for one season. Right?
UDFA. He was released on September 3rd.
He was a UDFA who did not make the roster. He didn't make the roster. That's your best receiver, right? All right, so Darvin Adams is your best receiver, a UDFA who doesn't make the roster. Tyrell Zachary caught 43 passes. Who the heck? I'm sorry, Mr. Tyrell, but who are you? Zachary. Did you do anything in the league?
He doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
Exactly. Like, this is the issue. Right. Like, with freaking... Okay, all right, so rushing. He did have a good running back with him, didn't he? Yeah, Michael Dyer, who ended up transferring out. But Michael Dyer ended up transferring out after a little bit of scandal. But essentially, Cam Newton, 1,400 rushing yards, led the team in rushing, 1,400 yards, 20 touchdowns. And passing as well that year. Where's my yards? Right. Oh, that's yards per game. Passing right there. 2,800 yards with another 30 passing touchdowns. 50 touchdowns, seven interceptions. I don't see fumbles here, but there were not that many. To me, period. The okay. best. And it's.
That's
it
not
feels
real.
Disgusting because, of course, it's Auburn. But like. The best single season that I have ever seen with my two eyes. We'll say that.
I did not realize that team was
nobody's. That. Nobody's.
Yeah. Wow.
Just a bunch of three star recruits. I mean, who's your best? Nick Fairley made it to the league. Nick Fairley on defense made it to the league, and he was nasty that year.
D Ford too, very good NFL player.
Yeah, but you're really not a whole lot of talent here. Not a whole lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. Cam Newton, to me, greatest single season in college football history.
That's a take that I have to respect a lot more now after actually seeing who he had, who he was working with, man.
It's blasphemy, but like, he was untouchable. How do we start on Cam Newton? Oh, trap games?
Yeah, trap games, Cam back.
Oh, gosh.
How the six doesn't even... Yeah.
Let's land the plane here. Let's do then. That. Is there a trap game on this schedule?
I think the closest thing to it is Missouri. I think it's one that when you shut a team out 40-0 and when that team loses their star receiver and their QB, pretty easy to look past them. You know, Eli Drinkwitz, we both have already talked about how we like him as a coach. I could see them making that competitive.
I think that's a good pick right there, Theo. And we're losing our camera again, so let's close out the day. You guys follow us at Bama Central on the social media machines. You follow the Bama Central YouTube channel. You find us at JoeGaither6, at Theo_Fernandez_. We're going to be back tomorrow talking all things Alabama. Oh, Wednesday, Theo. We are going to start SEC previewing, and we're starting with Texas. If you want to leave me a voicemail talking about Texas football, that would be appreciated. We'll get your take in there, but Texas is what we're going to talk about. On Wednesday, we'll talk about Ryan Wingo. Will Arch Manning be the greatest quarterback that we've ever seen in our lives? Is Steve Sarkisian going to get fired if he doesn't win a national championship? We're going to go Texas. We'll go Oklahoma. We'll go week by week by week by week and hit these opponents. Oh, at least these SEC members. We'll start looking at some of these football teams. Gives us a little content as we go through the summer. We appreciate everybody who's watched us, who's listened to us today. Talk to you again tomorrow on the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. Keep up with Joe on all his social media pages at JoeGaither6. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and be sure to read us daily at BamaCentral.com.